Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Land DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of February 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. University of Illinois ag economist John Newton will join us to take up last week's agricultural outlook figures as they relate to new crop soybeans and the price of that crop. John's got some really interesting insights. And then as we close out our program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Don Day is out of the office this afternoon on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers now in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Corn futures finished the day like this. The March contract at 377.5 was down a penny and a quarter. May futures at 385.5, down 1 1/4. And July futures a penny lower at $3.93.5. December at $4.09¾. New crop 3/4 lower. The March down 3/4 as well at $4.18¾. May of next year, by the way, a gainer up 2.5 cents at $4.28 for the day. Soy complex now, bean futures $10.16, up 16¾. The May at $10.18¾, 17¼ higher. In July soybeans, the settlement price $10.23, up 17. September at $10.04¾, 13¾ higher. November up 13, $9.92¾. In January at $9.97½, up 12½ cents. Bean meal for the day finished at $3.56.90. That was up $8.60. The bean oil at $31.42, 28 cents higher on the afternoon. Chicago wheat at $5.05¾ unchanged. July there at $5.08¼ for the soft red, down a half cent. And the July hard red finished at $5.43½. That was up a half cent for the day. Live cattle futures at $156.35, up 32½ in the February. April at $146.62½, down $1.47½ for the day. Feeder cattle finished the March at $195.55, down $2.52½. The April at $194.70, down $2.35. And lean hogs per 100 pounds in the April contract at $68.77½, up 45 cents for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $49.11 a barrel, now down 34 cents for the day. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.02, that's 20½ cents lower on the afternoon. And gasoline at $1.61¼. Down 3½ cents. Natural gas for the day at $2.89¼, up a penny and a half. And ethanol futures finished in Chicago at $1.37¼. That's up 2⅜ cents. Dow Jones Industrial Average at about 18,189, up 104 points. The gold futures around $1,200 even, down 75 cents for the day. And the dollar index at 94.56. That's down 0.097. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A chance of flurries, mostly cloudy, a high of just 31 degrees, breezy with a west-southwest wind at 15 to 21. They'll gust to 30. That 31 will feel pretty good after last night, by the way. Tonight, mostly cloudy, gradually clearing out, a low of 14 degrees, and then tomorrow, increasing clouds, a high of 26, and Wednesday evening, a 50% chance of snowfall. We'll have cloudy skies and a low of 12 degrees. On Thursday, a 30% chance of snow, cloudy, and a high of 18. Thursday night, cloudy and zero. And Friday, mostly sunny, with a high near 18 degrees. By the time we get to Friday night, a 0-degree low under partly cloudy skies. And for Saturday, 27 under partly sunny skies. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 24th day of February. On the phone line, Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, to take up the Chicago Board of Trade, the CME Group Trade, and what's been happening around the planet. Thanks, Wayne, for being with us. Soybeans managed a pretty good rally today. Was that due mostly to activities in South America?
Well, I think that started the ball rolling. The truck blockade of beans coming to the port, of diesel fuel going to the field, did create some worry out there. And then it was also aided by the fact that they were able, with that news, to push through the 1,500-day moving averages, which also tripped some more triggers and some stops and black boxes and whatever along the way along with that, too. So we saw a very nice run-up in the corn and the beans this morning that lasted until the announcement from South America that the judge ruled that it was illegal to do these blockades, and they were going to be having their police forces breaking down these blockades.
And will they act upon it, do you suppose? And will the truckers abide by the judge's ruling?
Well, that's yet to be seen. There was talk of $100,000 an hour of not leaving the blockade and fines. That does have a little bit of teeth to it.
That's pretty. That'll incentivize you to move a vehicle, won't it?
That's more than the diesel tax down in South America. So I don't know if it were or it won't, but it sure made the market back up. Corn after the December corn up 418.5, ended up closing down here at 4.9¾, down 3/4 on the day. So with the nice move up there, we sure took the oomph out of the surrounding markets going on up with the beans that way.
Yeah, so. Surprisingly, the soybeans did manage to stay put. I suppose that has to do with the amount of time it'll take, really, to start the beans to flow into the system as much as anything, right?
Well, I think that basically, they were held up there by the technical traders. They did hold them above their 100-day moving averages, and that still tripped that trigger for how they look at things that way. So there is a little strength there left, but not quite the oomph that was there right before the announcement was made. So we did see a little bit of a setback that way. We've still got some awfully cold weather. We've got some really tight bean meal basis on the eastern part of the U.S. and also some pretty good bean basis is at the processing plants. That way, they're staying very firm. The crush margins are still good in the U.S., and we're seeing that there are positive in China, and we're looking for China to be back in the market after tomorrow, so to see what they'll do. They were pretty aggressive buying before they went to the Lunar New Year, but will they come back in strong here now?
Yeah, so a couple of things you did mention there is that Lunar New Year, the celebration in China finishes off, and they'll be back in the marketplace maybe, and the trade trying to position itself for that, I suppose, with maybe some new sales of soybeans. And then the weather forecast is calling, as you mentioned, for the cold to stick around for a lot longer here again, and I suppose that'll keep bean meal and other things moving through the pipeline to try to keep livestock, which will need more feed than usual at this time of year, in good condition.
Yeah, that's very much true. I mean, we are using, and like I say, our bean meal demand is staying very strong. This, again, of course, throws a little red flag up to how soon do I want to pull away from U.S. Shipping lanes to keep open when we see that these problems do happen. It seems like more often in South America than they do in North America, although we did have sort of a hold up out on the West Coast, and it looks like the stevedores have finally agreed to go back to work out there. So that is, we'll be helping our meat situation a lot. I think we'll be able to export and get some of that meat moved off the West Coast.
Okay, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. And while you're there, go ahead and purchase your tickets. You can do that online for our all-day Ag Outlook. It's on Tuesday, the 10th day of March, over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Happens to be a World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Day. We'll have more than a dozen of our regular analysts, three extra along for the day, and we hope you too. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural news. Your director of ag programming is here with today's newscast. That's David Dickey.
Something to monitor. In agricultural news, nearly 400 groups have signed a letter telling congressional budget leaders hands off the farm bill. The timing of the letter is especially important because USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack is scheduled to testify before the Senate Agriculture Committee and the House Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee this week. The letter defends all programs in the farm bill, including farm subsidies, food stamps, and conservation programs. The letter notes that the 2014 Farm Bill required over 3 years of debate in both chambers of Congress and ultimately ended with the consolidation of over 100 programs and cuts to mandatory spending across many titles. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen says the Federal Reserve will remain patient in deciding when to start raising interest rates because too many Americans remain unemployed, wage growth remains sluggish, and inflation is running below the Fed's target. The Fed has been saying since December that it would be patient before moving rates higher. Yellen noted in her testimony today to the Senate Banking Committee that the central bank would drop this assurance before rates go up. The Fed's next policy meeting is March 17th and 18th. Yellen laid out inflation in the U.S. as a key to the decision on when rates would rise. Inflation has been running below the central bank's 2% objective for nearly 3 years. Yellen says, provided that labor market conditions continue to improve, the Fed anticipates it will be appropriate to raise the target range of the federal funds rate when it is reasonably confident that inflation will move back over the medium term towards a 2% objective. Canada's Minister of Agriculture, Gary Ritz, says that there are five countries that have closed their doors to imports of Canadian beef due to discovery of a case of mad cow disease. Korea, which constitutes 1% of Canada's sales, was the first to stop the imports and has been joined by Taiwan, Peru, Indonesia, and Belarus. Ritz estimates the impact is minor, totaling 3 to 3.5% of Canada's global beef sales. At this stage, Ritz says that there are no indications that either Japan or the U.S. is thinking of following suit. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report Commodity Week. And on Thursday night of this week, I'll be in Casey, Illinois, at the United Methodist Church at 6 o'clock. You're invited. This is free and open to all, although you might want to call and tell the Extension Service in the county that you're planning to come because there is a meal. We'll have along with us that evening Jackie Vakes, along with Sherman Newland and Merrill Crowley, as well as Gary Schnitke, to take a look at the Farm Bill. Should be a great evening there at the United Methodist Church in Casey on Thursday night. Starts at 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined in studio now by John Newton, ag economist at the U of I. John has taken a look at the numbers released at the Agricultural Outlook Forum held in Washington, D.C. last week. John, first, were you at the program last week or were you here?
I was here at Agronomy Day in Litchfield.
Oh, very nice. I'm headed to Litchfield, in fact, tomorrow. I'll be there tomorrow morning. So we've had a couple things in common. However, you did have one slide in the presentation out there, didn't you?
Yeah, we sure did. Since I came to Illinois, I've spent probably the first 6 months finishing up a dairy tool for the new Farm Bill Dairy Margin Protection Program. And as part of that tool, we do a forecast of dairy margins. That's dairy income over feed cost margins. Online, you can see a forecast of what dairy income over feed cost margins are going to look like for the next 12 months. And that was used at the Ag Outlook Forum in one of the slides, our forecasting model.
Now, you've been here at the University of Illinois since
March.
March of last year, for right at a year now. Can you tell me about what you did before you came here?
Well, sure. kind of had a number of stops. I spent nearly 10 years working for Ag Marketing Service as an agricultural economist. Ag Marketing Service is a division of USDA. In that job, I was based first out of Louisville, Kentucky. Then I went to Cleveland, and then I spent 4 years on detail in Washington, D.C. During that time, I also worked on the Senate Ag Committee as a research fellow. That was on the 2014 Farm Bill. And then after the Farm Bill was passed, I spent some time working for the Office of the Chief Economist to help conference the dairy title to what we see today.
Well, the pedigree is good. We're really glad to have you here at the University of Illinois. Let's take up some of these numbers from last week. The thing I think we should start with are the acreage figures. The trade had been at around 88 million acres. That was an Informa number that seemed to seep into the trade, and they really liked it. However, USDA's figure is much, much lower.
Yeah, we talked about this just a couple weeks ago. And when I was doing balance sheet projections with you, I had about 85 million acres of soybeans. Well, USDA came in last week at 83.5 million acres of soybeans. That's 200,000 acres down from what we planted last year. And that's a significant deviation from what the trade had anticipated at anywhere between 82 and 88 million acres with an average of 86 million acres.
So 200,000 acres isn't that far down from last year, but when you look at the numbers, you're still up at 85 at this point. Have you changed your mind about that? Where do we stand?
You know, that's an interesting question because I started to think about, well, let's look at spring prices for both corn and soybeans, and look at some planting incentives. What are the incentives to plant beans versus corn? And then if you start to think about, well, at what prices will we start to see acres fall out of corn and soybean production? That's not something we have to deal with really in the Corn Belt because we're pretty consistent, corn and beans. That's what we do. But on the peripheral and some of that lower productivity areas, maybe these prices are enough to get people to switch out of both corn and beans altogether. And so you could see a decline in acreage. But, you know, I see an opportunity where people can continue to produce soybeans, given their lower cost of production, and we could see an increase in acreage. I think that's what most of the media reports had thought, and that's what the trade had thought as well. But I just wasn't as bullish on the acreage volume as the trade was.
Interestingly, the supply and demand figures that USDA came out with, and it's really all about how many bushels are produced more than anything else, aren't all that different, frankly, than the record crop we produced last year. But it all has to do with the yield USDA is thinking producers of soybeans will raise this year.
That's right. So, you know, you do a lot of hand waving. You get the USDA has a higher yield estimate than what the trade had. And so when you combine the higher yield with lower planted acreage from the USDA with the higher planted acreage, lower yield that the trade thought, we're not that far apart in total production. I think only 56 million bushels different in total soybean production estimated for next year. So, you know, that's the big picture. We're still expected to produce a lot of soybeans.
A lot of soybeans. USDA's number, though, for average cash price seems pretty low at this point.
You know, that's an interesting thought as well. I think the USDA has soybeans at marketing year average price about $9 a bushel. That's $1.20 below the projected marketing year average price this year. And I think what makes that interesting is if you look at this year, the pace of consumption in soybeans, you know, we're projecting a 300% increase in ending stocks this year, but we're only seeing a 20% decline in the marketing year average price in soybeans. So, you know, that's a significant deviation from historical patterns. So prices have remained relatively strong this year despite our building supplies.
Do we know why?
Well, soybean exports have been off the charts. Every single week, we continue to defy expectations on soybean exports.
Yeah, that may be the case, but the deviation says so big deal, right?
Yeah, based on the level of ending stocks, one could assume that the market is overpricing beans at this point in time. But, you know, you have to remember that there has to be some sort of relationship in these corn and bean prices to get acreage next year. And that's a historical relationship. About 2.4, I believe, is the recent corn-soybean price ratio. And corn has remained in that $4 range on the December contract. So, you know, soybean prices much below where they are today starts to make that, that corn-soybean price ratio come down quite a bit. And so I think, you know, given the historical pattern and relationship between corn and soybean prices, that would explain soybean prices where they are. But we have an ample supply, and that's where things start to get confusing is we're building stocks at levels which we haven't seen since before the renewable fuel standard. You know, almost 400 million bushels of beans. We could, in fact, increase that next year if we have a yield above trend and USDA acreage numbers come in where they are. And so with such high levels of stocks, you would see negative price pressure. And, you know, if you look historically, the relationship between stocks and prices would suggest a much weaker price than what we have today.
One of the next mileposts that you'll be watching in the marketplace to give guidance to where price of soybeans will be, how many acres might be planted, is it simply the grain stocks and the acreage and the prospective plantings report, or are there other things that you'd be watching?
You know, the prospective planting's a big one. Getting an idea of farmers' intentions on plantings for next year. And then, you know, I'm going to continue to watch the crush, continue to watch soybean exports, because not only are we on pace to export a record volume this year, but USDA and their Ag Outlook actually projected exports to increase again next year. So back-to-back record soybean exports. So that's something to monitor. Can we continue to consume soybeans at the level we are? And if we can, then that should provide some price floor and positive price pressure from where we are today.
I'm going to ask you one other question, not related to this, but I think that you may have an answer to. How important is the new USDA crush report going to be for the marketplace?
I think that's going to be very important. You know, traditionally you get it out of the NOPA crush report. And I think the USDA report is reviving a report that they used to do. They're bringing it back, as I understand. And that should help to get some idea on the pace of soybean crush. Another thing to keep in mind is, and Daryl and Scott had a Farm Doc Daily article about this a couple days ago, is what happens with the RFS. You know, are we going to get to the point where we're crushing soybeans for oil? And then what are the implications then on soybean meal prices, and how does that offset corn feed and residual on the corn balance sheet? So these are all things to kind of watch. I mean, some of these are long-run things that you keep an eye on, and some are short-run things. You know, the pace of consumption and soybean crush being those two short-run things I'm watching.
John, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
No problem.
John Newton, ag economist at the University of Illinois. You can find his opinions on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. He wrote the weekly outlook released on Monday of this week. Also, you can pick up Daryl Good and Scott Irwin's thoughts on the RFS as it's related to soybeans and soybean oil there. Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Don't forget to buy your tickets for All Day Ag Outlook, 217-333-7300, the number to call, just $25. It's March the 10th over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
It's National Tortilla Chip Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, Robert Fulton died, an American inventor and engineer. He brought steamboating to a commercial success. In 1839, William Smith Otis, a civil engineer from Philadelphia, received a patent for the steam shovel. In 1849, John Henry Comstock was born, an American entomologist. He did pioneering work in the systematic classification of scale insects. He spent a summer in Alabama in 1878 studying the cotton leaf worm before becoming the chief entomologist of USDA. In 1874, John Bachman died, an American naturalist and Lutheran minister. He published studies of southern animals and works on botany and agriculture. In 1938, DuPont began production of nylon toothbrush bristles for its Miracle Tough toothbrush. The nylon bristles replaced bristles of neck hairs from wild swine from Siberia, Poland, and China. And in 2006, Andrew Sherratt died, an English archaeologist. He was an expert on the prehistory of Europe and the origins of agriculture. He proposed a theory of secondary products revolution that made farming possible even on agriculturally marginal land by trading in milk, wool, and textiles. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Hey, have you purchased your tickets yet? I hope so for the All-Day Ag Outlook. If not, it's not too late. You can do it at 217-333-7300 or online at willag.org. Speaking of online, here's Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You can find him on our website, too.
Incredibly cold conditions continue to occur across portions of the Midwest, and we're going to see yet another impressive cold surge a little bit later this week. The temperatures this morning from areas near Champaign, Illinois, over into the central sections of southern Ohio, reported temperatures in the negative teens. In fact, it was as cold as minus 19 in a part of that region. Temperatures at this time of the year, or any time of the year, shouldn't be that cold across the lower parts of the Midwest. Just amazing how these cold air masses have been lately. And it looks as though we will see a little bit of a break in this now for just a short period of time. But there is another impressive cold air mass headed for the region. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll see teens and 20s again across a big part of the region. Some 30-degree readings expected in the far south. And Kansas and parts of Missouri will again see some temperatures over 40 degrees. But it gets colder from there. Looks like on Thursday afternoon, single digits and teens will become common across the Midwest. On Friday, probably the same thing. Mostly teens, though, will occur. We'll see a few 20-degree temperatures in the far southern portions of the region. And then as we get into the weekend, we'll start a little bit of a recovery with Saturday temperatures, 20s and a few teens, and we'll also look for 20s and 30s probably occurring in the lower parts of the Midwest on Sunday. The temperatures at night, though, will be what's so impressive. We're going to, again, see temperatures getting down below zero as far south as parts of Kansas and Missouri, central Illinois, and portions of central Indiana and central Ohio. This will occur on Friday. It looks like Friday will be the coldest day now, and we'll see temperatures in the negative teens and perhaps close to minus 20, again, near the Canada border in the far northernmost portions of the region. These bitter cold temperatures are part of a persistent northwesterly flow pattern that has been prevailing, obviously, for a big part of the winter season. And we are going to see it ease up a little bit as we move on out deeper into March. But the flow pattern in general may be a little slow in abating completely. But we will get away from these extremely cold air masses and probably do that as early as next week. But we do have a lot of suffering yet to deal with here with this scenario playing out over this week. As we go out a little bit deeper in time, the cold high pressure center will settle on top of the region as we go from Thursday into Saturday. And it's when the high pressure system starts to abate from the region that we'll run into the best potential for precipitation across the region. Another winter storm is likely to brew and move across the heart of the region. This will come in from the central plains probably sometime on Saturday and spread across the entire region as we go from Sunday into Monday of next week. There'll be quite a wintry mix of precipitation types and hazardous travel potentially across the region. We'll be monitoring that over the next few days.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. My thanks in advance to Dave Dickey, who'll be filling in for me tomorrow here on the closing market report as I'll be traveling to Litchfield in the morning and then Belleville to the St. Clair County Farm Bureau building at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you'd like to join us there, you can. I'll have Jackie Vakes and Mike Zuzolo along with us for a Will Ag Outlook panel. Hope to see you there at the Farm Bureau building at 4 in the afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.